So we won't get to a low carbon future without going through buildings. That means buildings play an outsized role in New York. But for me, that means buildings play an outsized opportunity for how we can shape the future of climate regulation.
New York City's Local Law 97 is the most ambitious emissions regulation ever enacted by any city. But 2 years after its passing, exactly what compliance should look like is still largely unknown due to a lengthy rulemaking process and the potential for additional compliance pathways. Welcome back to Sustainability Street, our podcast on the intersection of commercial real estate and the world we live in. I'm Therese Fitzgerald, Executive Editor of Commercial Property Executive. In this episode, I discuss some of the pivotal issues shaping a law that will be a model for the rest of the country and perhaps the world. Let's get started. In New York City, real estate accounts for about 71% of all carbon emissions. So when the city passed its sweeping Climate Globalization Act of 2019, one of the 10 local laws that emerged sought to regulate building emissions. Local Law 97 will impact 50,000 properties over the 25,000 square foot minimum, about 60% of the building stock.
Definitely a groundbreaking law. It's the first of its kind that's going to have this type of impact where buildings have emissions caps put on them.
That's Yardi Energy team leader Brian Fridkin. I asked him to help me with some specifics about the law, which is designed to help the city reduce CO2 emissions 40% by 2030 and 80% by 2050.
And the emissions caps, you know, they start in 2024, and every 5 years, those caps decrease.
2030 is the first time the caps decrease by 40 to 50%, depending on the type of building.
So the first 5 years are supposed to ease people into the program. They say that 80% of buildings won't have to do anything to comply those first 5 years. Then the next 5 years, it flips.
That's when 80% of buildings will need to do something to comply. And owners and operators who exceed the carbon per square foot caps for their building type will pay $268 per metric ton of carbon over the cap. The law specifies a number of ways to comply.
So obviously the first is energy efficiency, right? Actually changing the way your building operates to make it more efficient, reducing your energy consumption, which therefore reduces your emissions. But the biggest user in commercial buildings is also the tenants in the building, right? And you don't have as much control over how your tenants are using energy.
That makes engaging with tenants a critical part of achieving compliance. Another way to comply with the law is to purchase Tier 4 renewable energy credits. The ability to purchase RECs is a welcome alternative for owners whose buildings may be highly efficient by LEED standards, but are likely to exceed their caps because they are densely populated and/or contain tenants whose businesses operate 24/7. It's also one of the hairiest parts of the law.
The law is very specific, and it says that those RECs need to be directly transmitted into Zone J, which is New York City. New York City doesn't have wind. We don't have solar here. We don't have hydro. We don't have geothermal. That doesn't exist in New York City. There's no space for it. So the law is interesting because it says it has to be transmitted to New York City, directly transmitted to New York City, which means that power could be generated outside of the city as long as it's being directly brought to the city. So currently, this doesn't exist.
There are a couple of transmission pipelines underway, as well as a few offshore wind farms, but they won't be operating for a few years, and RECs in these projects are virtually impossible to purchase. So at the urging of the real estate industry, Governor Andrew Cuomo included a clause in his 2022 draft budget that if no Tier 4 RECs are available, owners can purchase Tier 2 RECs, which support legacy renewable energy projects in the state. The proposal is also backed by the building services unions, with some limits stipulated.
Tier 2 RECs are much more broad, so they don't have to be, they're not directly transmitted to New York City. They're just in New York State. They could come from older renewable resources older wind or older, I believe you can still use hydropower for those tier two RECs. And those can be facilities that have been in existence, you know, for years, while tier four RECs are brand new and have to be in New York City.
It is important to note that the state legislature did not support the governor's proposal in its version of the budget released on March 18th. So it remains to be seen if the proposal will make it into the final budget, which is due April 1st.
On one hand, a lot of real estate groups are saying there's no way that I can comply with this law. Like, there's no way I can reduce my energy enough. And these RECs don't exist, right? These tier four RECs.
Yeah.
So I need alternate ways to comply. So, you know, let me use these tier two RECs. But then you have environmental groups on the other side saying, okay, these tier two RECs are way, you know, more widely available. They're going to be cheaper. And that's going to make buildings say, all right, let's not do energy efficiency projects. It's cheaper to just purchase tier two RECs. So we're just going to purchase these tier two RECs and that'll cover our emissions. And that defeats the whole purpose of the law, right? So that's the big debate right now.
There is one other narrow pathway already written into the law. Owners can buy carbon offsets for up to 10% of their emissions cap. And the offsets are not restricted to electricity-related emissions like RECs are. But if an owner is more than 10% over their cap, this would not be helpful. For more on how owners view RECs and the governor's proposal, formerly known as Part R of the Transportation, Economic Development, and Environmental Conservation Budget, I spoke to Zachary Steinberg, Vice President of Policy for the Real Estate Board of New York, which lobbied the governor to intervene on the Tier 2 pathway. First, Steinberg emphasized that Local Law 97 is a law that regulates carbon rather than energy consumption, and that 90% of the city's electricity is reliant on fossil fuels.
What we're trying to figure out is how do we provide a mechanism for property owners to mitigate and manage their risk from, you know, a very dirty electricity system in New York City in the interim while we wait for much larger scale renewables to be deployed in the city. And the governor's budget proposal, I think very astutely recognizes that the state has this resource called Tier 2, which are older renewable generators in the state whose power and renewable attributes we want to keep in the state for the purpose of helping us to reach our goals. And we should allow building owners for this temporary period of time until we don't have, from the time, you know, where we have very few renewables in New York City to where we have significantly more, to make investments into those generation assets, keep them in the state, and use them to help with local law compliance.
If the governor's proposal is not in the state budget, Steinberg said, REBNY will continue to work hard to help its members find ways to meet the requirements of a law, which in its current state is particularly burdensome for owners of buildings that are too expensive to retrofit and owners of buildings with dense tenancies, many of whom have led the city in sustainability. And that's why, Steinberg said, the idea that owners would choose to buy renewable energy credits rather than make their buildings efficient is a false choice.
Because the way building owners are evaluating this is they're looking at all of the above strategies to comply with not just Local Law 97, but their own corporate goals and the goals that their tenants have for their own corporate structures. And so what you see happening is that owners are continuing to invest in efficiency because it makes good economic sense to do that. At the same time as they're also looking to source their power from renewables. And that means buying renewable energy credits. And so I think you see that strategy being employed quite widely.
Next, I spoke to John Mandyke, CEO of Urban Green Council, an environmental nonprofit dedicated to lowering the carbon footprint of buildings. The group's multi-stakeholder membership includes environmental advocates, academics, and design and real estate professionals.
So we won't get to a low carbon future without going through buildings. That means buildings play an outsized role in New York. But for me, that means buildings play an outsized opportunity for how we can shape the future of climate regulation.
Urban Green Council is represented in two of the working groups of the Climate Advisory Board, which is helping the buildings department in the rulemaking process. REBNY is also represented. For Mandike, the governor's proposal is bad policy because it provides a compliance path with zero energy benefit. It does not create any new renewable energy, he said, and it floods the market with more RECs than is needed.
So it's this double whammy, negative environmental effect that, okay, you're not investing in any facility that's generating net new renewable energy, and you're discouraging the reduction of energy and the acceleration of energy efficiency in New York City where we need it. So it's just fundamentally flawed. Then on top of it, it's just a misplaced venue to be having this conversation. I mean, we shouldn't be renegotiating Local Law 97 that took 4 years to pull together in the state budget.
Together with a number of other groups, Urban Green Council recently presented a concept paper proposing an alternative to Part R that would be carried out at the city level. It would allow owners who are over their caps to pay into a fund dedicated to improving energy efficiency and carbon reduction in affordable housing. The groups also proposed limiting the RECs an owner can purchase to a set percentage of a building's emissions above its annual GHG limit.
That way we get the carbon reduction that we need in New York. We provide access to capital so that affordable housing can gain the benefits of sustainability, where access to capital has been a barrier. So a new funding stream becomes available for that. And we provide buildings a compliance mechanism, because, you know, I get it. There are legitimate concerns for why some buildings, no matter how much energy efficiency they do, can't comply with Local Law 97, because there's a density penalty, for example. You can't always control what your tenants are doing from an energy standpoint. So I get that we need, you know, to be creative with alternative compliance paths. But as Urban Green, we can't support any alternative compliance path unless it actually provides carbon reduction. Part R doesn't do that.
But both Part R and Urban Green Council's proposal would address an aspect of the law that most everyone objects to. And that is, the fines that would be levied against owners who are out of compliance go directly into the city's general fund rather than being earmarked for investments that reduce carbon.
Fines represent a failure across the board. It's wasted money and it's wasted opportunity because we don't get the carbon savings. Look, Local Law 97 is designed to get us carbon savings. We need the carbon savings. If we don't get the carbon savings, then the law won't be successful.
There is another potential compliance opportunity under consideration, carbon trading. With the passage of Local Law 97, the city committed to explore such a program, also termed cap and trade, whereby an owner who was under their emissions on one building in their portfolio could use those savings to balance out the overage on another of their buildings.
If there's an incentive to go lower, maybe there's a whole heck of a lot more carbon savings to be had to go lower, but there's no incentive. But cap and trade could create that incentive, because if you go lower, you could monetize the excess carbon savings and sell it to the building owner that for legitimate reasons can't comply with Local Law 97.
Urban Green Council pushed for the carbon trading feasibility study and implementation plan to be part of Local Law 97, and it is leading the stakeholder engagement on behalf of the mayor's office. The organization also formed the first ever five-city collaboration on carbon trading for buildings, along with Hong Kong, London, Singapore, and Toronto. The cities brought together 50 experts from around the world, and the convening resulted in a publication that identified 59 policy options any city could implement. Carbon trading would be another groundbreaking program, since carbon trading in real estate is only currently practiced in Tokyo. One of the most significant details the buildings department and its advisors must determine in the rulemaking process is what the carbon coefficient will be for 2030, the time when 80% of covered buildings will have to comply. The calculation is needed to convert electrical, steam, and gas usage into carbon. Setting the carbon coefficient, however, involves predicting the future, because it is difficult to know how green the grid will be in 2030. Since the state has set its own goal of being carbon neutral by 2050. Here's Brian Friedkin again.
that's definitely something to keep in mind and makes it even more difficult to plan for, right? Because you don't know how those emissions coefficients are going to change every 5 years. Right now, they only have them released for the first 5 years. So you can't necessarily calculate what your emissions are going to be after that, which then means you don't know what projects you'll need to implement by 2030 to qualify for the next set of emissions targets.
Despite the uncertainty around Local Law 97, I know many New York City owners have been working on lowering their carbon footprints for some time. One of them I spoke to for this podcast is Rudin Management. Rudin is one of the city's larger owners with 16 office towers totaling 10 million square feet and 18 apartment buildings. Rudin Management COO John Gilbert told me the company has lowered its carbon emissions from steam and electricity 46% since its benchmark. They have done that by creating what Gilbert calls a brain for buildings in the form of a cloud-based building operating system called Nantum. Nantum OS was developed by Prescriptive Data, a Rudin Management spinoff that operates across the United States and in Canada. Here's how it works. Nantum collects data from various building operating systems and brings it into a central point. It then correlates the data against each other and against occupancy data, weather, and time to make operational adjustments that save electricity and maximize tenant comfort. Here's Gilbert.
Physics, chemistry built our buildings, right? Today, sociology and biology are really helping to run our buildings as we match those patterns of human behavior against the operational technology that we have within our buildings.
Rudin also just announced a partnership with Crown Castle, in which 345 Park Avenue will be the first building in New York City to launch a citizens broadband radio service network, which is 150 megahertz of wireless spectrum. While delivering superior internet to tenants, the system will allow Rudin to get really granular data from within their tenant spaces. The data can then be shared with tenants so they can participate in lowering their energy consumption.
You know, when you look at a building's consumption pie chart, it's 60% of the energy on average in a building is consumed by the tenant, and 40% is consumed at core. So in effect, the owner controls 40% of the problem. Local Law 97 says, okay, you only control 40% of the problem, but you've got 100% of the responsibility to solve that problem.
CPE will be watching as Local Law 97 unfolds, and we will update you on these issues and others that may arise. Thank you for listening, and I will meet you next time on Sustainability Street. In the meantime, feel free to email me with feedback or suggestions for future topics at therese.fitzgerald@cpe-mhn.com. Bye for now.